is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
It's time for Enlightenment in the City with El Hosho Tara on the News for the Soul Network. El is a spiritual coach and intuitive reader with a unique flair. Strong yet soft, compassionate with a heart, she lives the consciousness of being feminine with strength. El tells it like it is. Welcome El Hosho Tara back to News for the Soul.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to this hour of News for the Soul. I am your host, El Maya Hosham Tara, and we're going to do the mailbag here today, and I've got a lot of people in there already. So we have Dana in New York, Dolores in New Zealand, Don in Toronto, etc., Serena in California. So just so you know, you are in the mailbag, and I will get to you either today or one day. So let's talk a little bit about authenticity. Ooh, the fun stuff. Yes, we've gone through all the pain and the suffering. Well, not all of it, but so much of it. So let's talk about some of the fun stuff today and about being authentic. And why do you want to be authentic? Because it feels much better to be able to expand your wings and live your fullest potential. And being authentic is part of that. So why does being authentic go wrong sometimes? Dum, dum, dum. Well, that's when we start to go back into the codependency. Just when we thought we were getting rid of that stuff, here it is again. So authenticity, I really want to be clear again, because anything can be done from the interdependence versus the codependent spectrums, right? We've been over this. If you listen to the show, we've been over this a lot. So the authentic nature, your authentic nature, and everybody else's authentic nature goes along the same spectrum. You either have interdependent, which is I am healthy, responsible, okay, and yes, I am taking other feelings into account, and I'm understanding from their things, from their point of view, but it's important to understand that when a lot of quote-unquote negative feelings come up, sometimes it's just a matter of like reorganization. Sometimes it's people's past stuff. Sometimes it's codependency. And when we start hitting the codependency, that's when you get the demanding and the toxicity and the abuse and the, you're not a good person if you don't give me my way every single moment I want you to. You're not caring, you know, and it's like, oh boy. And that's not, that doesn't mean if you're saying no because it's unhealthy for you to say no, or because it's you're responsibly taking on, like, say, a really big project, but sometimes that will ruffle some feathers, but you're doing it in a way that you're still responsible for your stuff. That includes your half the child care, your half the housework, which may mean, you know, you're going to make more money and suck it up, buttercup, you're going to have to hire a maid, you know, to cover your half or whatever it is. You can be responsible, okay, and still follow things. And the codependent version of authenticity is more like, whatever I'm feeling I should get, I want it, you should give it to me. And when you're on the receiving end of that, that's also when you start to, like, you get out of balance because you feel like you're supposed to be accommodating things, even if they're not really good or beneficial for you to accommodate. And there can be a lot of guilt tripping. By the way, guilt tripping is actually considered abusive. So it's not just, you know, hitting, child molesting, rape. It's not just like these physical acts of violence. There's emotional violence too. So manipulating, setting people up to look like the bad guy. She's such a bitch because she won't pick up my socks. Yep, chicks just don't understand the guy. Yep, 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 yep. Nope, that's codependency. That's not male direction. Because there's male direction, healthy interdependently, and then there's female direction, healthy and interdependently. And they both have equal rights, and they both have equal usage, and they both deserve equal respect. Codependency doesn't like that. And that's when you get the, you know, he's got a penis, so whatever he says goes. And if you're doing better than somebody and somebody's got that attitude, that's the wrong person for you, ladies, or anybody who dates men. that's the wrong person for you. Because it doesn't make sense to give somebody their way on something when they're doing less well than you. It doesn't make sense to give that up. And that's how we know that it's codependency. You know, and this feminine direction. So feminine direction, we typically think more in terms of, like, you know, how we're guiding the family unit in terms of health, in terms of vitality, in terms of caretaking, making sure people's needs are met. And if you have a guy who's a really great father and a mother who's a really lousy, not involved mother, or she's very codependent, it doesn't, you know, stuffing the kids full of junk food, for example, it doesn't really make sense that you're going to hand that over to a woman who's eating, you know, caught up in, like, you know, sugar addiction, processed food addiction, et cetera, et cetera. It doesn't make sense that you're going to hand that over, or child discipline, if she's, you know, taking her stuff out on the kids. So it's important to understand, again, codependency doesn't like this, that everybody has masculine and feminine direction. And it's not a, I have a penis or I have a vagina, so I magically get my way. It doesn't work like that. But in codependency, because people don't have the skill sets and they're used to dealing with other people who don't have the skill sets, things tend to fall under those purviews. And the more that it falls under a codependent purview, the harder life is going to be and the more pain and suffering there tends to be. And not everybody wants out of that. Some people, their self-worth comes from dominating other people. They interpret that as power. when you get to the higher levels, you're not taking on people that want to dominate you or dominate your life just because they have a penis. Quite plain and simple, it wouldn't make sense to, because you're going to have your life wrecked in some cases for somebody who doesn't know what they're doing. So what if they do know what they're doing? You still need room to breathe, but it doesn't mean always being agreeable. And it also means that you need some support. And this is why sometimes you get men who are very rich and very successful, and they end up with women, you know, 20, 25, 30, 40 years younger than them, because they're next to impossible to work with for somebody their own age. Not in all cases. Some guys are very lovely and they have women their own age or within a more acceptable dating range. But some guys just won't do it for somebody their own age, whereas if they have somebody younger, they're willing to be more reasonable to hold on to the relationship. And so that's why sometimes you will see a guy, you know, being younger and they're like, he's a fool. In some cases, yeah. In some cases, that's the only thing that's going to be the thing, is the age difference and the vitality of youth that's going to get them to be more reasonable and capable in giving in a relationship. Now, is that always true? No, I've definitely seen some older guys with younger women, and those younger women have been more emotionally healthy, but he's got more money, you know, or whatever else, or they're more in their masculine, for example, and maybe they have somebody harder time finding somebody their own age, and they take on older men who are too broken to be in good in relationship with. So that definitely happens as well. And then you do have older guys, you know, taking on young broken women just so they can get their hands on, you know, young titties. So that happens too. So there's all the different, like, you know, variations of it. But bottom line, when we are looking at, you know, authenticity, again, we are looking for the healthier versions of it. So codependent versions of authenticity tend to be, you know, I feel it, therefore it's true. No. Mm-mm. So, and sometimes people, well, they don't, especially like when there's been a lot of pain and suffering, it's very common to find people where, excuse me, they don't feel that way in a certain moment, but, well, they might feel that way. So twist, twist, twist. They twist things around to make it seem like they feel that way. Yep, yep, yep. Therefore, they should get their way. And no, it doesn't make sense that you're going to accommodate something because it's not truthful. It's not truthful. If it's not truthful and somebody's making demands from that place, I mean, you can have your life run over, and that does happen a lot in codependency. You can have your life run over by people who just want to twist things around to always make it seem like they're the victim or they should always get their way because they have a penis. And neither of those factors is true, accurate, or healthy to follow along or to give into. So when we're looking at the authentic nature from an interdependent standpoint, that is, you're whole and I'm whole, and from there we come together. And there are ways, and there is room for people to be full and fully spread their wings. It just doesn't mean that spreading your wings fully means living more of who you are, but it doesn't mean that you're always going to get your way all the time. That's the codependent interpretation of it. Because a healthy individual, okay, this is important to understand, a healthy, responsible, mature, not in age because age isn't necessarily an indicator of that, unfortunately, but mature emotionally, you are capable of being flexible. In codependency, people deliberately aren't flexible because they don't know how to be flexible in a way that's going to be healthy and serve, and they don't have boundaries necessarily, and in a lot of cases do not, to make certain bad behaviors stop, or how to pick people who aren't quite as troublesome to deal with anyways. And so does this mean, you know, when you're in your authentic nature or you're interdependent, that somebody's, you know, you're always going to be delightful? No. Everybody has codependency. I really want to be clear about that. It's just the different levels of it will vary, and how much of there is overall will really make a difference between whether you have a healthy emotional life, you've got emotionally healthy friends who are able to support healthy serving behaviors, and then you've got people who are always, you know, trying to take their stuff out on everybody, always giving up their power, then getting angry about it, then taking their stuff out on everybody, feeling entitled to take their stuff out on everybody. And those types of environments tend to have a lot of abuse in them. They have, tend to have a lot of toxicity, and people will not live the things that they should be doing that are healthy, including sometimes when you actually want them to be doing those things, because they think it's bad or wrong. And this is really interesting, and that's when they screw themselves over even more. So interdependency, so let's say that, you know, one of my best friends, love it a bit. She's awesome. So her and I, we've always, it's been so strange, but her and I have like pretty much always been at this exact opposite spectrum of what we want to eat. So when I met her, I was vegetarian and she was very much into a protein, animal protein. And then I got back on animal protein and she went vegetarian. So, you know, it's been really interesting, and it's like, so we, you know, have been on this like sort of opposite ends of the spectrum. And within that, we tend to go out and we go for coffees. We, you know, tend to eat together, all those sorts of things. So how do we do that? Well, and, okay, so and this is interdependency. So number one, I like meat now. Now that I'm off being vegetarian, now that I'm back on the meat, I actually like meat more than I ever used to. And my body calls for more protein now than it ever used to. I used to be very carb heavy when I was younger. And my body doesn't like that as much anymore. Here's the thing. Do I need meat at every meal? No. Is it my preference? Yes. Does my body require it? Yes. If I come home from her house, do I still need to have a little bit of protein sometimes? Yes. Absolutely. but you know what? I love her. It works. And I just have to have a little snack later on. And it doesn't have to be a big deal. And I don't need to force her into eating meat, because I can just make sure that I have a heavier protein meal before I meet her, or I can just have a little extra protein snack later. It doesn't have to be a big deal. I just, you know, sometimes come home and have a sandwich. And that works. but also, like, when we go out, we're not just always going to, you know, a steakhouse. In fact, I don't think her and I have ever been to a steakhouse. And there we go to vegetarian restaurants, but sometimes, a lot of the time, we go to cuisines that they're really good about having vegetarian items, but they're also really good about having animal protein. And so that works. And because we are both flexible, healthily flexible enough, we can always find something that we want to do or eat together. And it doesn't have to be a big deal, okay, unless somebody tries to make it a big deal. And that's where you see more like codependency. So codependency is, you know, you got a group of friends who are all going to go out to eat. Great. What about the seafood place? Okay, we've got Shelly along. Shelly's really allergic to seafood. Okay, we're not going to seafood. Why? Because seafood can be very life-threatening. And some people's food allergies are so severe, they'll end up hospitalized. So no, we're not, as an interdependent group, we're not going to put Shelly through the risk of sending her to the hospital just so we can have seafood. Why? Because we can have seafood on a different night. It doesn't have to be the day that Shelly is there. Codependency is very much like, you know, fuck Shelly. She can eat it. She's sucking it up. Well, they're just over-exaggerating, you know. She's just over-exaggerating food allergies. And it's like, no, these things are really big deals, but codependency doesn't like to give, doesn't like to admit. And again, you know, to point out from codependency's point of view, when people have had a lot of suffering over the years for, you know, expressing a different opinion, and there's been a lot of attack for that, which happens a lot in codependency. Sometimes people just don't know how to behave, or they don't know how to healthily meet other people's needs because they have great fears of being overrun and their needs will never get met. And is that true? If you're on quote unquote like the if you have the least amount of value according to the group, so if you're like the lowest man on the totem pole, so to speak, I just realized I have to stop using cultural references. but if you have the lowest self-esteem of the community, for example, or that group, sometimes, you know, what that person wants and needs will not get accommodated, especially in codependency. And that's a tough one. And it is important to understand that we do need to respect, like, if they're part of your friend group, you know, they're going to have a say. And that's important to understand. Now, that being said, if somebody's always going to be, like, the lowest, you know, denominator of the group, there will be places where they just don't want to go. And it's going to be beneficial for the group to go, and you're not going to say no just because they don't want to cooperate. You're not going to turn down the event, for example, just because they don't want to cooperate or they don't, aren't capable of doing it. So, you know, and again, so does this mean, you know, you're having a birthday party, you exclude Shelly because of the shellfish allergy? No. But, you know, that being said, you know, if, like, some of you really want to try out a new seafood restaurant and five or six out of you are going, you know, sometimes you just need to be able to – it is important to have the freedom to still be able to go to the seafood restaurant. Now, does that mean you make that your regular meeting place and deliberately exclude Shelly? No. but it doesn't mean that you stop yourself from going to the seafood restaurant just because Shelly can't participate. It just means you're also doing other things with Shelly because she's part of your friend group. Now, within that, sometimes people, it's not going to be appropriate to keep certain people in your friend group because you just don't have enough common interests. And to keep them as part of the friend group means that you're always consistently giving up activities that you love, or it's always going to be a problem. And in that case, it is absolutely appropriate to say, like, you know what, this probably just isn't working for us, you know, if you want to meet a couple of the members to go do this or do that, and they want to go hang, great. But there are natural divides that do start to happen when one group has an interest but one member doesn't, and that's okay. Codependency makes it bad and wrong, you know, because you're going to lose all your friends if just because you don't want to cooperate with certain things. And from that perspective, like, obviously it feels scary and obviously that doesn't feel right, but we're not talking about you're losing all your friends because you don't have an interest in something. It's that you don't have enough in common to make it reasonable for the friendship to work. And sometimes you just have very different paths. And it's each individual person's responsibility to find their own path. So what if, you know, so I'm not saying, like, you know, and I want to be clear about this. This is not, you know, say screw you, Shelly, because she's got a seafood allergy. Absolutely not. But if, you know, Shelly hates, you know, kayaking and you're a very, you know, adventurous group and Kelly, and Shelly really doesn't like to do that, then you just might not have enough in common. So, you know, it's like, okay, we're going skiing in the winter. Woohoo. You know, Shelly hates skiing. Okay. Well, we'd love to go for seafood. We're a bunch of seafood lovers. Shelly is allergic to seafood. Okay. Not her fault. We love to go kayaking in the summer and camping in the fall, and Shelly doesn't like to do any of those things. Okay, but you're going to have, you know, that maybe, you know, Shelly really likes to go to the movies. Okay, but some people really, you know, they're not into that, and they might want to go to a concert, but, you know, Shelly can't afford to keep up. And that's okay, there's nothing wrong with it, but you just may not have a good enough match. Because here's the thing, you know, if you only have something in common with somebody that you're not really into, that's just not the right friendship, and that's totally fine. What if you have somebody that you still care about, then there's, you don't have anything against them. Sometimes you take that person and you do go out with them, but you're going out in more of a supportive manner, and this is not like for the rest of your life, because, again, sometimes things happen where you just won't have the time or other interests are going to pull you away, or they don't understand that they have to meet their needs, and they just won't do it. And in which case, you know, there does come a time when it's like, okay, do I want to keep this friendship or not? If somebody really doesn't want to help themselves. But there are ways that we can help people while still being authentic. So what if, you know, we still hate going to the movies and Shelly really likes it and it's one of the only things that she'll do? So sometimes, you know, we sit down and have a conversation with Shelly and, you know, and find out about different interests. And, you know, maybe Shelly really loves the steakhouse. Great, you know. So we can go for dinner a few times. Like, you know, what if steak's not your favorite? You know, if you're being of service, sometimes you go anyways and you get chicken at a steakhouse or whatever it is. You know, and if it's like you're going to be stuck eating a side salad and you're vegan, you know, and the smell of meat starts to become rotten if you're off it long enough, then again, you know, things may just be too uncomfortable. And for anybody who's been a vegetarian long enough, I mean, you walk into a grocery store and they're roasting the chickens, which they do here in North America. They have rotisseries in a lot of stores, and the smell of cooked chicken wafts through the grocery store. And you can't smell it if you eat meat, but if you don't eat meat, it's the most disgusting thing in the world as soon as you step through the doors. I used to hate grocery shopping. And once a year, I'd have like one bite of meat just to make the smell go away, because otherwise it would just, so hard. And for somebody who's doing that or doesn't want to take that one bite of meat to make the smell go away, then sitting in, you know, in a steakhouse is going to be, quite frankly, unbearable. But if you don't have like that severity of it, you just prefer chicken and you're not a huge beef eater or not a huge steak fan, you know, sometimes you just go anyways to get her, you know, a couple times, like, yeah, we've gone here. Okay, now you know where it is. So we don't have to keep going to that restaurant, you know, every single time to go out for dinner. And again, you know, it really depends on, you know, who it is. If you've got a relative, you know, a little old lady, or somebody, that's a little bit different. And it's also a little bit different than if you're helping a relative. They have friends. And when you're going to be supportive, you know, the friends are sexually harassing you or, you know, ganging up on you, you know, being abusive, toxic. And if they have friends, you know, that can be good enough. You know, it may not be what they want. They may not go to appropriate places. But, you know, if they're really insisting on bringing their friends along everywhere, then you're really not necessarily needed and you can let that go. But otherwise, in a more serving friendship, we can do those things while being authentic, even though it's not what we personally would want to do. We're just being of service because we have a helping nature. So while it may not feel completely authentic as in, oh, I want to go here and this is only it, again, authentic nature is not about I always have to have my way. It just doesn't mean like, you know, being stuck in a friendship for long term when it really isn't working for you. It's like, okay, maybe you don't have enough going in common with somebody, so you're taking them to a couple restaurants here and there. You're taking them to places that they wouldn't have the courage to go to on their own, and they don't frequent them. And you go with them to a couple of times to these various places so that they get the hang of it. So if they have an interest and inclination to follow up with it, they know where it is. They've been there. So some of the mystery has been, you know, sort of dissolved. Some of the fear has been dissolved. And then they've had access to it. And three times per event or whatever is enough. Then they can understand it. They understand it's out there. It's sort of like broken the wax seal, so to speak, on it. So it becomes more easily accessible for them should they choose to want to go to. Now, they do say, you know, you need seven times for a habit, you know, to become ingrained. Some people will take a lot longer than that. Excuse me, sometimes people don't even need that much at all. Sometimes even just the offer lets them know that you care, and they may not even take you up on it, and that works too. So there are different ways that we can serve from being caring but not be in relationships long term, and it doesn't mean that you're not being authentic. I really want to be clear about that. If you are being shoved into something that really feels bad for you, you know, maybe you've got a friend who's got a friend and who's got a friend group and they like to harass you, that would be more an example of like not respecting yourself in terms of, you know, your authenticity, what you're here for. And it's not really having self-respect to, you know, put yourself in situations where you're allowing yourself to get abused. Those are the distinctions about, you know, when we're healthily expanding our wings, we're still having self-respect. It's just that some situations are more workable. And it's not about like, no, I will never do anything that I never want to do. Because there will be times when even in the best friendships, even in the best relationships, you're going to have differences of opinion, or you're going to have different needs, or you're going to be going through different time periods where you're going to need different things from each other. And that's fine. And that's normal. And that's healthy. If it was only, we're only going to be friends, or we're only going to hang out, I mean, you'd be fucking your family over, quite frankly. You'd be screwing your kids over because your kids are too young to have the same interests, or you're not respecting their desires as a parent. And if you've ever seen somebody who is like that, who's got a parent, you can watch them, you know, continually shortchange and screw their kids over and be very, very selfish as a parent just because the kids don't want to do the same things that their parents want to do, even when they're not actually even old enough to have that as an interest. So, you know, those sorts of things are really important to understand. Like, it's not about being selfish. That's codependency. Part of interdependency is that we nourish in appropriate ways different interests because it's going to be good for the people around us. And with our children, we go and do those things because it's good for our kids. When they have healthy serving interests that are different than ours, we're being supportive by going to those things. And sometimes, yes, we do that as friends as well. but it's just different depending on what your relationship is. And it's very different than doing that than, you know, there's not really, quote unquote, being supportive, but you're pretty much giving up your whole life to support somebody else because you don't currently have people who have the same interests as you or lifestyle supports, etc. And those friendships are okay to let go. family members, there's a huge difference between saying screw you as a family member or saying like, you know what, you know, hey, you know, we don't have anything in common, love you cuz, but we just don't have anything in common. You know, I'm not, yeah, no, I totally understand why you're not into this type of food, but, you know, this is where I'm holding my birthday party because I always wanted to hold it here, and it's really exciting, and if you don't want to come, cool, you know, and it's, and again, there's a big, huge difference between saying that you're never going to do anything you want or have to give over really big things that are important to you just to accommodate somebody else, because you can accommodate to the point of, you know, you don't have the wedding that you want. And that definitely happens. Again, they talk about bridezillas, but they don't talk about bridesmaidzillas, where, you know, they won't eat a certain thing. And it's like, well, this is what we're serving for the meal. And, you know, all your guests, you know, their own, this is the food that you're going to be serving. you know, it just doesn't work. Okay, you want vegetarian chicken, fish, you know, meat, whatever. And sometimes that's got to happen. And sometimes, you know, you do need to offer make some compromises, like offering a milder version of something. we had Indian food for our wedding dinner, and I had forgotten how, and it was mild because I'm like, I am not the spice queen by any means. So it was mild that I forgot what it's like the first time I had started on spice. And one of our relatives turned bright red, even though it was mild. And it's like, oh, right, I forgot. It's really hot if you're really not used to it. So there are certain things like, you know, okay, you know, learning from mistakes or listening to that when people give you advice and nobody had told us that and I had forgotten. So it was a big surprise for all of us to find out, oh, yeah, right. That level of heat at mild is enough to choke somebody just are not used to it. Whoops, sorry. you know, so there are times when, you know, we do still naturally hold what is right and good and positive for us. But making a concession, like offering a milder meal that somebody is used to, is very different than, you know, making sure that like all the cuisine is only, you know, is not even accommodating the bride or the groom in order to accommodate a fussy, you know, relative, for example. or a relative who, you know, is naturally going to be in pain because they're just not used to it. you know, there's more serving ways, of course, again, this is the point, to be authentic, and it actually works. And when we have the hang of it, it actually does start to sort of, it does actually start to sort, you know, who you're going to be in a long-term relationship with and who it's going to be better to let go of. And sometimes, yes, we talk about when we're dealing with codependency, we talk about, you know, letting abusive people go. Self-development talks about letting toxic people go. Absolutely, that happens too, but it doesn't happen all the time. Maybe you have an abusive parent or, you know, a toxic relative or whatever that you're, you know, that's family. You're still going to keep them around. But there are different ways that we can do it that are going to be more safe and still honoring, respectful, without, you know, going overboard into accommodating fussiness, accommodating codependency, accommodating somebody who just wants their way and that's that. And, you should ruin your whole wedding because they don't like those colors or whatever. So there are different ways to do that. And again, you know, it tends to feel, why do we want to go for, you know, more the interdependent version of authenticity? Because that feels good. And that's the thing that's going to make you happier in it. Again, interdependency respects what other people need. They just respect the interdependent part of it and say no to the codependent portion sometimes or a lot. Excuse me, depending on the person. But there is still a way to make it work. It's just, it's more of this lovely sort of like dance. Because does it need to be a big deal to serve a milder meal at your wedding? No, it doesn't. Does it need to be, you know, a big deal because one of your bridesmaids wants to wear a shawl over her dress because she's not comfortable in it? No. Does that mean that, you know, you have to let a bridesmaid in, for example, who is only going to wear a certain color and it really does not go with the wedding party, and so she's going to stand out more than the bride, and do you need to accommodate that because she's wearing, you know, bright pink to a black and white wedding? No. So we can't, you know, do this. And, you know, why is it called selfish? Again, because sometimes people use it in selfish ways, but also because in codependency, if you're doing something healthy and serving, sometimes people just, in some cases, they just throw tantrums and they call it selfish, and it's not selfish. It's just somebody doesn't want to cooperate. In other cases, they're just not there yet and they don't understand because their mind is too much for the codependent spectrum. And that's a really hard learning curve, but there are ways to be more authentic. And when you have it down right, it tends to feel really good and you end up being able to be more healthily supportive of the people around you, and it becomes more beneficial to be involved with you. There are really a lot of really great benefits to authenticity, provided you're doing it in the right way. So let's see. So Annie, we haven't heard from you in a while. So we do have the open lines here. Annie, you want to call in? So let's see here. We've got... so we have Dana, New York. She wants to know if her investing into acting school training is ever going to pay off. So Dana, New York, I mean, you were talking about the creme de la creme de la creme. So, I mean, that's your fiercest competition. It's going to be in New York, honey. So let's see. So it's a good place to cut your teeth. Let's see here. Dana, what I'm getting is, like, it's never going to be a big stage. what I am getting is that you can definitely, you know, be on the stage. I do see people in the audience, which is good. It does look like there's enough people that it may be a paying gig. Let's see here. So, I mean, you can, if you're looking to be like, you know, a star where you're going to be like really, really severely, you know, rolling in the dough, I don't see that happening, honey. I do see you being able to get up to, hold on, let's see here. One moment here, I'm just checking amounts here. So I do see you being able to make money off it, but the top amount that I'm getting would be $38,000 a year. anything above that, it starts to very, very much peter out. And then, like, beyond $50,000 a year, it just cuts off, and it doesn't, like, I can't even sort of, like, it's kind of hard to explain. Well, it's basically like I can still see the numbers up till 50,000, but they're getting like lighter and lighter. So it's like that's like rare air. And then to get you beyond that, it's like the numbers don't even show up. Like they're just extraordinarily, you know, extraordinarily faint possibilities. let's see here. Okay, so the fun conversations with people. So, honey, what they're saying is that one of the biggest issues for the blockage and working on that, you could double it. But what they're saying basically is that your ego is getting in your way. Because when you're going on stage and you're in the ego of what you think it should look like to be an actor, it's causing problems in terms of affecting your acting. And it's quite pronounced. and that is going to be something that really, really, really cuts you off. There has to be, I mean, you know, and this is important to understand. I mean, you know, people get a taste of fame. This isn't just you. People get a taste of fame. And, you know, sometimes it goes to their heads. And again, you know, it's any increase in power. I mean, you get people who are like, they make 50 cents more an hour and they turn into Godzilla. you know, it's like it's 50 cents an hour. So obviously, you know, if you're, you know, doing something like being on stage and you're like, I'm a star, obviously, you know, that's going to have the potential for the ego to start, you know, saying like, I am here. But it's really, really getting in your way. So if you want to take a look at that, you do have the capacity to double that. Hold on here. But you do have some blockages that you are going to need to work through because you're the first person that I've ever seen. Like, it's like, okay, we could get this far, and there's, like, definite cutoffs. And it's like there's this, like, giant pair of scissors that's, like, putting a really huge cramp in it. So if you've ever, like, you know, had thin wire with pliers and, you know, you got the cramp, those little, I'm assuming they're called clamps, but those little tools of flat nose, whatever they're, I forget what they are. but you squish them and it's like, you know, you get that flat part of the metal, where the two wires kind of squish together, or you twist them around or whatever, flat needle nose pliers or whatever they are. That's not quite accurate, but you understand anyways. That's kind of what it looks like. Like there's this like definite like cutoff, and it's not just that you can see the crimp in it. It's that like there's the crimp and then there's like the cutoff, like that's in and that's it. And it's very, very strong in terms of like that cutoff. And it's like whenever it's like you seem to have a certain level and then, you know, not just like, okay, it's not going to go any further. But it's, like, really, really hardcore, like, bam, cut off. So those would be things that you would need to be looking to into as well. but, you know, and I want to be clear, like, you know, having modesty does not mean low self-esteem. Sometimes people do that. It's just that sometimes, like, when people get into the ego, I mean, you know, imagine if I'm doing this on the show.
Yes, yes. I am L, the goddess of wisdom.
You know. And I mean, everybody was going like, ah, you know, and some people are listening to this going, ah, so gross energetically, because those kinds of things are, right? And we can understand this, like, when we hear those things in other people. And, you know, so if I'm doing this on the show or, and I have done it as a joke, and I hope everybody understood that it was, you know, my attempt at humor, you know, obviously, like, if I'm going on stage doing that, and I'm not saying you're doing that, but it's definitely showing up, you know, and it's just, you know, and it's one of those things that, you know, I mean, it's a skill set. And being around other people who are, you know, very, very successful, you know, instead of being envious, we understand we have that modesty and we can just be like, oh, you know, this is what it looks like. Wow, you know, I do have that room to grow, because sometimes the ego blocks off that we have the room to grow, to sort of like, you know, try to maintain any self-esteem we have, especially if we're in the face of somebody else who's doing better. That can be the part that really screws you over. So just looking and listening that, like, okay, yeah, these people do have these things that are going better, then those are the things that we can learn to listen to, that we can improve. But also for anybody who's an advanced practitioner at anything, you do have to know when to recognize when somebody is doing better than you at something. And having that allows you to, and being willing to open to that, which I see as a problem, that's one of the blockages there. It's one of the things that allows you to get better, because part of the advanced practitioner is the ability to, or being an advanced practitioner, is you have the ability to recognize when somebody else is doing better in a certain area than you are. And that's really, really important. And this, again, this does not mean, you know, falsely doing it because you're listening to people because it makes you an advanced practitioner when you shouldn't be. That doesn't make sense. But when you honestly recognize that somebody's doing it better, listening to them, okay? And if you feel like, you know, you're getting bad advice from somebody, you know, sometimes that happens, and sometimes people see things that are doing differently. So, I mean, if you are, you know... I don't want to say, like, if you're really genuinely getting bad advice, because unfortunately when I see people in your position, they tend to think that they're getting bad advice even when they're getting good advice, because the ego is so strong and they're not listening to anything. So with your situation, I find that tends to be harder. But when you do find people that you do recognize are actually doing better than you, and you like the way that you teach and you really like them and you really actually feel like you're getting somewhere out of something with them, then that is really a good place to look for, oh, this is it. You know, if they're teaching acting, that's a really good person to say, maybe I should be going here instead, because that is one way that we recognize the information. And doing that, and being in places where you are able to put down, you know, your guard and put down your sword, like, it's them, it's not me, and you can actually listen and learn, that will help to clear up one of the blockages. And then I can get you up to, let's see here, maybe about $120,000 a year. So that's a really big one. And again, one of the reasons why I tend to see people who are in your position where they have a hard time listening to other people, you know, again, I see that when the people have been through a lot of codependency, you know, there's been too much bad advice, you know, not respecting boundaries, et cetera. So I understand why it can be hard to know who to listen to. But the thing is, when you do recognize that, even if, and the people that you are going to see and recognize that in, until... you work that out. And usually I see people who have that problem. They do better after they've had trauma release work done, which is important. they start to have a wider ability of people that they can sort of like listen to and gain certain facts from and be able to take advice from, not because you're forcing it yourself into it, but because it can help you to put your guard down. And this isn't like, I will put my guard down, done. I don't need to see it, you know, somebody who deals with trauma therapy. It's not that, because there's some things that we can't control that will interfere with our ability to see and pick out people or listen to or know who to listen to, that can make you more on edge. And that can come from physical issues as well, in terms of the way that we're holding it in the body, from emotional abuse as an example, or other different abuses or other traumas, you know, falling off the bike as a kid, however it works. So I don't know how much is held in through just emotional abuse, but you do get people who are, you know, fried. Their nervous system is fried because they're always scared about getting in trouble, for example, because they've been yelled and screamed at a lot as kids or manipulated a lot, et cetera. but physical manipulations can help with that, and that would also help, you know, with posture and stuff like that, which can really make a difference on stage as well. But all those sorts of things, you know, it is important to follow when you actually understand somebody and you can trust them. Those are going to be the main people that you're going to want to follow in the beginning. Because, you know, you do need to be able to be comfortable, but when the comfortable is not, I don't have to do it, they should always take care of me, that you are comfortable enough to sort of listen to their advice because you understand what they're talking about. You know, and from that perspective, thank you so much for, you know, calling in to me or for writing in here. because I know that's not always an easy thing for people to do. But that does seem to be one of the things that you're being called to, is to, you know, start to, yes, say no to the people that you understand really don't work, but not twisting it around to make it seem like, you know, they're not working, but also giving yourself permission to follow the people that you actually know can help you. And again, trauma treatment can tend to help with those sorts of things, because there are definitely things that can, and again, this is through resolution. This is not just somebody telling you to breathe and all of a sudden magically they expect everything to clear up and you're like, this isn't working. Because you need more than that. We're not talking about that. We're talking about things actually get resolved, and things like, you know, stubbornness can go down. There are, I talked about, I think it was the gallbladder that one person was talking to in terms of the physical manipulations. People have issues with the gallbladders. They can have a hard time being able to tell, you know, who's going to be bad for them versus not. And that would be your visceral and neural manipulations. Excuse me, and again, you want to look for somebody who actually deals with trauma, and, you know, then we can get you up to $300,000. So, you know, I mean, you do have a really good possibility of payout with this. So you're not, it's not like you're on the wrong path. It's just sometimes our path calls for us to straighten a lot of things out if we want the things that we want. So, you know, now, I mean, you can make a nice living off it. I'd consider $300,000 good living. So there you go. So good luck with that. And, you know, let us know how it goes. And again, you can listen to the replay here on newsforthesoul.com. Just look for this date and my name. You can just Google L, that's E-L-L-E, Tara, and then you can find the recording and you can find all the different things that would help with that. So we're almost at the top of the hour here. And so let's see who else is being called. We're going to have time for one more mailbag. And we have, so Dolores in New Zealand wants to know if love is in the cards for her this year. Well, Dolores, the new year, this year is almost over, but I will check and I'll check for the next year too. so let's see here, Dolores in New Zealand. Oh, yeah. So Dolores, honey, hold on. I'm just going to see if we change that. You've definitely got a blockage. Let's see here. Yes and no. So no. With the current blockages that you have, I see absolutely nobody for this year, next year. with working on some of the blockages, and again, we're all being this, I mean, it's pretty much part of the evolution of being on this plane. You're either going to work through stuff or you're not. and especially for the last few years, people have really hardcore been called to work on this stuff, work on this stuff, work on this stuff. And I'm not going to say I completely and absolutely see yes, a relationship is happening, but at least I see people starting to appear. So what is the blockage? Dum, dum, dum. That's a $1 million question. so the blockage is that, you know, sometimes, and again, this would be the codependency stuff, sometimes when we're used to a lot of suffering, we think that the suffering is how we're supposed to act and behave. And we act in ways that come from that. So you see a lot of things like, you know, life is a dance, you know, and so people become like very, you know, dramatic with the life is the dance from the, you know, from the, like the melancholy side of things. And then like, see the beauty. But when you're, when people are, say, for example, addicted to, to the pain and suffering, what happens is there can be a tendency to be like, overusage of the more melancholy things because it feels good, and that's what people are getting the payoff of. So some people, for example, get a really strong payoff from feeling depressed. They feel very sexy. You know, it's like when people are really used to that. I mean, feeling depressed is very, very sexy, and it's very seductive. And you see some people who are like, they really like the fuck depressed chicks, you know, and it's like, and unfortunately, because that's out there, some women are like, oh, yes, they're going to get a man by being very, you know, depressive and melancholy. But it's important to understand that when people are sort of like looking for that level of dysfunction to have sex with, that usually means that they've got something of their own going on. And for people who have come out of it enough, they may still not want to be in relationship with somebody, but they may be willing to use them for sex when they're doing sort of like the melancholy sorts of things. And so that, like all the more melancholy expressions of it, that's what you're being asked to resolve, because that's the stuff that's getting in your way of love. And they're really wanting you to come out of it because, you know, when you are capable of being happy, that's a really great payoff. And it's absolutely beautiful, but you do have to be out of it enough. But that's when things start, you know, happening for you. Trying to find somebody who's wanting to come in, even though I've seen a lot of people who think like the depression is beauty, you know, and beautiful because of the payoff that they're getting. And for that, I would, again, usually suggest somebody seek out things like somatic therapy, visceral manipulations, those sorts of things. Neural manipulations can help with that because it's a lot harder to find somebody in that space. And basically, I don't get anybody for you this year or the next while you're still in that more melancholy space. I wish I could go on more, but we're at the top of the hour. So I really do wish you the best of luck. And again, somatic therapy for somebody who's and look for people who really deal with trauma a lot. So thank you so much, everybody. I wish I could have ended on a better note. But I'm here every single week, 3 p.m. PST, here on newsforthesoul.com. And stay tuned. We have somebody brand new following this show. So thank you, everybody, so much. Again, go to my website, www.enlightenmentinthecity.com. You can come in for reading, come in for the coaching, because that's where you're going to win. So thank you so much, everybody. I love you. Again, 3 p.m. PST, here on newsforthesoul.com. Bye-bye.